Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Hey, coaches, before we get going today, I just wanted to thank you for all you've been doing to support this podcast. And we have an incredible lineup coming up here. We have just about every major college conference represented. We have a ton of FBS coaches, Division II coaches, Division III coaches, some great high school football coaches coming on the podcast to share with you and help you grow professionally during this time. I really appreciate all of you asking your questions on Twitter. Please follow me at Coach K Grabowski for our daily updates on our guests and your opportunity to ask questions. We will read them on the show and attribute those to you. So please contribute to the show as much as you can. I also want to talk to you a little bit about our football development model, which is something we've rolled out here at USA Football. And this is really for you to be able to help your youth football programs develop. It's about a long-term athlete development plan, something that comes off of the American development model, which is something that the USOC has put together. The idea is that we're able to teach skills in a progression starting at the youngest ages. We're also looking at the different game types we have, whether that's flag, which is non-contact, limited contact games like padded flag or tackle bar, and full contact, and the right progressions for contact teaching there as well. Be sure to check out all we do at footballdevelopment.com and check out what we're doing with the FDM, the football development model, at usafootball.com/FDM. USAfootball.com. Today's podcast is an exciting one for me. Throughout your career, I think you have some people who have an effect on the way you do things. You learn things from them. Sometimes those people come from the opposite side of the field, and that's absolutely true with today's guest for a number of years. He was on the other sidelines across from me one time a year, but would be a great guy off the field, a great guy to learn from. And, you know, just to watch the way he would do things, I think there was a lot to learn from Mike Hallett, who is the co-offensive coordinator and offensive line coach at the University of Toledo. So, Coach Hallett, I appreciate you taking some time to join us here on the podcast.
Oh, it's awesome to be with you, Keith. I'm really excited about sharing some time with you and the guys that are going to tune into this, and hopefully we can all get a little better today.
Absolutely. So, Coach, I got to tell you, like, you know, when I talk to you sometimes, I'm always nervous because there was always that side of, like, what is Hallett up to right now? And funny story, like, well, Mike, number one, I mean, you won't see a guy work as hard as recruiting as him. And it was something that I really picked up on and would watch how he would work these camps. We'd go to all these satellite camps and we'd see him everywhere. And this guy's like the Pied Piper. As soon as that camp ended, I mean, he had hundreds of kids around him and he's like filling out their forms, handing them stuff, and like they would just kill it in recruiting. But you know, the other part of it was, you know, Mike seemed to have an effect on how we would do things at times at BW, because he would never hesitate to call and let our head coach know that he was ahead on recruiting or they were doing something like this way or that way. And, you know, for me, it was always leave shaking my head like, man, this guy's just, he's making life tough for me over here. Mike, I could tell you there are times when I wasn't saying nice things about you, but it was, you know, you look at the OAC and all that, the coaching staffs, so I think there was a camaraderie, even though every single Saturday we wanted to beat each other's butts, but it was a lot of fun coaching in the OAC, a lot of fun coaching against you.
Well, I think there was a great camaraderie in the OAC because there were so many guys that had such a history together. When you look at the times that we were there, you know, Coach Snell had been in the league for a long time as a head coach, and prior to that as an assistant. Larry Terrace, of course, was a legend at Mount Union, and there was a number of coaches that had played for him that were coaches in the OAC. Dean Paul and I were teammates, and, you know, and Dean and I worked together at Thomas More. He was my boss, and, you know, and you kind of run through it, and I think everybody looked at it as, we're going to compete our faces off 365 days a year. That's really going to play out one day a year when you face these guys. But we're all recruiting the same guys. We're all trying to find our niche in terms of how are you going to differentiate yourself? How can you make a connection with the kid that maybe somebody else hasn't? And can you build relationships with people that are really going to make an effect on them as people more than just as players? And I think that was our message. It was trying to develop the whole man. And really our mantra was help guys reach their full potential. I know that's a term that's used quite a bit, but I learned that when I worked for Dean at Thomas More, first got my start in college coaching and really tried to carry that with us throughout the rest of my career, whether it was Thomas More or Heidelberg or now at Toledo. And, we're fortunate Toledo is surrounded by a bunch of guys that are really making an effect on kids. And, a great staff that has a great impact on kids can lead to great results.
Yeah, and I had mentioned, the calls you would make to our head coach. I could tell you, Mike, there's a number of Saturdays that weren't on a recruiting schedule that were taken away from me because, you weren't afraid to say, hey, we got this many guys. And then, of course, John would be like, oh, geez, we got to have another recruiting day.
And I love John Snell. It was so much fun just sharing time with him. And, John and I knew each other before I got to Heidelberg, but we really developed a great, great friendship and a great admiration for each other, I think, as we had that time to share with each other. And, sometimes I might have been a little bit overshooting some of the numbers because it was kind of fun to listen to John get uptight about it. I knew where we were at. I always felt like we were going to be in good shape, but I also knew Baltimore Wallace was always going to get great players. Their location, their facilities, and that coaching staff is going to do a great job. There was no question about it. So try to find some advantages and play a little bit of the Lou Holtz mind game on some guys. That was fun for me. Probably at your expense, but was still pretty cool.
Oh, yeah, it was my expense. And then, Glenn at Ohio Northern and those guys, heard about it through the grapevine, and then they started, because they had a relationship with John too. So Glenn had coached there before. They'd start doing that, and so now we get it at multiple angles, Mike. It was, but I mean, it's one of those things. You're right. 365 days a year, we're competing. I mean, and it's crazy. Wherever we'd go, whether it was at AFCA or, everybody's down in Florida at the recruiting fairs, it turns into an impromptu OAC coaches meeting. We'd all end up at the same place and punch out on the clock and enjoy some time together and talk ball.
We definitely had some fellowship when we were out on the road doing some of those things, and the OAC was unique in that the limitations that you had on off-campus recruiting, you had to take advantage of everything you could do, especially early on when we got to Heidelberg, because you couldn't go into schools and you still can't do home visits. So those recruiting fairs and all that stuff, that was a prime time to get out and get a chance to get your brand out to some places that maybe didn't know you as well. And, when we got to Heidelberg, things were tough and we had a long way to go to get to be competitive. So the only way, I'm not smart enough to outthink anybody. I just figured if we outworked them, we'd get a chance. And luckily we were able to convince a lot of really good players to come be part of something there. And that's the same kind of things we're trying to do at Toledo.
Yeah, I could tell you that's the one thing I really respected about you and your coaching staff is that you guys worked your tails off. And you did it the right way. I mean, as competitive as it was in the OAC, I mean, there might have been some new guys would come in and maybe talk trash or something like that. But, there still was that respect of everybody throughout where, nobody was bashing anybody else's program or bad talking anybody. And, and again, maybe some of the new guys who might pop in here or there, but they'd get straightened out really quick.
I think that, we tried to educate recruits that our philosophy was always, we have so much good stuff to talk to you about that there's no reason to talk about anybody else, good, bad, or indifferent. My time with you is not going to be spent on someone else's program. I'm going to use every minute of this visit, every minute of this phone call to really lay out what the benefits of our program are for you. And then you would count on kids and parents to make the right decision for them. And, I joked all the time that, on average, we got about 23% of the kids that we recruited. So I got used to being told no 77% of the time. You grow thick skin and you learn to recruit the ones that you got a chance at. And if kids have moved on, then you cut bait and you find the next guy. And, we were able to find good players and still keep it in an ethical manner in terms of how you handle it and how you handle the other teams that you're competing against.
I think the interesting thing about OAC recruiting is, we all had big rosters. We all brought in big classes. But at the same time, and I was the same way as you. I mean, I got you know, almost 100 guys, just me, to campus every year, and brought in about 30 of those guys. And, you know, early on, it starts with a ton of, you know, cold calls and phone calls and guys you saw in the summer who maybe weren't quite ready to talk to you yet, et cetera. But, you know, even with all those kids, it's still about relationships. It's not, you know, and I know other conferences try to sell kids on, oh, they're just recruiting numbers. But, you know, you bring those guys in and know that you're going to be something in our program and you're going to be something in our school. And, you know, there would be those guys that drop out, but I think a lot of them would just stay at the schools, right? Not leave those schools or try to transfer to someone else in the conference. Like, if, you know, we'd have those kids who would do it for maybe a year or two and then say, ah, you know, there's other things I want to do at college, but I want to stay close to it and find a way to stay with the program as, you know, a student assistant, equipment manager, whatever it might be. Or you just see them around campus and they're really friendly with you because you had developed those relationships.
No question. I think there's a lot of truth, a lot of value to that. You know, as I studied rosters of the, when we first got to Heidelberg, I studied the rosters of the playoff teams. And what kind of stood out to me was, you know, you're going to recruit what you're going to recruit your freshman year, but the key to really getting your program where you wanted it was the benchmark to me was having at least 35 sophomores, because your attrition rate in Division III was going to be the biggest from freshman to sophomore year. So you'd have to recruit enough guys to me to have at least 35 sophomores, and that 35 sophomore level would then end up to be 20 to 25 seniors with the rest of the attrition. And so in using that philosophy, we tried to build it from the bottom up and really stock your roster with good players that were going to have an opportunity to play for you. In our best years, you know, we got on a good run at Heidelberg and, you know, we're nationally ranked and got in the playoffs and all that stuff. Our rosters were typically 40 to 43 sophomores. And that was a mark of really pretty good retention, really good recruiting in terms of the evaluation of players and who's going to develop. And then having a way for those guys to develop physically and mentally to become the players that you wanted them to be. So that was kind of our formula for making that a successful venture, so that you could build a roster from the bottom and maintaining having that quality player that, you know, we had a lot of freshmen play for us early when I got there. That number became less and less unless they were really special, because the roster just had so much more depth to it.
You know, when you took that over, I mean, compared to some of the conference, you guys didn't necessarily, you had to build it on relationships, because you didn't have, you know, at the time you were playing at a community stadium, so you didn't really have your own stadium. You guys redid the locker rooms. I mean, you made a lot out of nothing, and you see where it is now, but you think back to those early days, and you said it to me on the field before a game. You're like, this is like a county fair, right? I mean, mismatched stands, people held back by ropes, like, but I'll tell you, it was a really, really fun atmosphere to play in, and we had some great games there. But, you know, I think just a testament to how you guys built it, that it was not flashy facilities or locker rooms or, you know, all that stuff. You got there eventually, and the program's there now, you know, because of what you guys did. But, you know, early on, it was all relationships.
That was, we knew what we had, and we knew what we didn't have. And, you know, there were going to be plenty of kids that the locker room was going to matter, the weight room was going to matter, the stadium was going to matter. And we were going to fight those fights, but we were going to lose more than we won. But for the parents and the kids that saw that we had a very specific plan for their advancement academically, athletically, socially, you know, those kids were the ones that bought into it, and they heard a message of belief and hope rather than, you know, wishes and dreams. And, you know, we would always say, you know, you got to have some faith here. Faith to me is belief without evidence. Yeah, we didn't have all that stuff, but we knew that if we got successful, we had an unbelievable alumni base that would help us, and they certainly did. And you know, we got that place to a level that I think is on par with everybody else in the conference. And the college has continued to grow and invest in their facilities and their physical plant. And I think the experience for those kids was a great experience early on, but it only got better as the campus continued to grow and improve. And you know, I think it's in a really good position right now for it to continue to grow. And I think that's you know, the Division I arms race that you see Ohio State, Michigan, and in our conference with us and other schools. I think that's true across the country, and everybody's looking for the next big thing that's going to make a difference in terms of recruiting and retaining great players and great kids.
Absolutely. Well, we kind of handled the OAC days there for you as a coach. I always like to, and I don't know much about yours before Thomas More, and, you know, as I heard you coming over to the OAC, I know you played at Mount and had a great career there, but for our listeners, I guess, if you could kind of fill us in on, you know, the start of Mike Hallett, at least the inspiration to be a coach and how you progressed from there.
I was fortunate out of high school. I played 1 year of high school football. I played as a senior and ended up with a very, very late scholarship offer to Kent State and played for Glenn Mason and his staff at Kent for 2 years. And I had a great time playing football and I had a great time socially. I was not what you would consider a stellar student, and I did not really handle that transition to college very well. I was basically a coach's nightmare, and I'm surprised somebody didn't take a wiffle ball bat to my head. So with a coaching change that happened at Kent, I went back home and I coached high school ball for 2 years and fell in love with coaching. And it kind of created my purpose that as I got a chance to work with kids and have an effect on kids that grew up in my same town, I saw what coaching can really do for kids, and it motivated me to go back to school. And I wanted to, I still had eligibility, I had 3 years left. I wanted to play. And I had some people around me, you know, the head coach at Oroville High School, Bill McMillan, and the head basketball coach, Steve Smith, and the offensive coordinator, Dave Bodica. They all grabbed me and said, man, you're really good at coaching. I know you're young, but you could do this and be really good at it. It really motivated me to pursue an education degree and to have an opportunity to impact people. So I went to Mount because I could use all 3 years of my eligibility, and they had recruited me in high school. And Don Montgomery was a huge influence as a defensive coordinator and recruited me in high school. And so I reached out to him and went back and had a great time playing with some great people and playing for great coaches. And I saw the coaching in Division I kind of felt a little bit more like a business when I was at Kent. And in Division III, it was a lot more like family. And that really stuck with me, that those relationships were really important. And that was part of the big success. The reason for the success at Mount Union was those relationships that the coaches built with their players and the relationship the players had. So after that, I had an opportunity to finish my degree and get a teaching degree. And so I started off at Akron Coventry as a position coach and then the defensive coordinator and teaching high school history and had a great time. And it was awesome. And we had really good players. And really good players make you look like a really smart coach. I learned that at an early age. And then had the opportunity to go to Worcester High School as the head coach there at 28, playing in a really tough federal league against, you know, the Canton, Stark County schools. And that was not having the better players. We had probably players that were really good, but not the depth that, you know, some of these other schools had. And we learned a lot of lessons that way. And then Dean Paul, who'd been at the College of Worcester, he and I connected. Dean went to Fordham and then went down to Thomas More and hired me to coach the offensive line and be the offensive coordinator. And we got to work together for 5 years. And then Dean took the Ohio Northern job and I got the chance to be the head coach at Thomas More for 3 years. And then went to Heidelberg and then from Heidelberg to Toledo. And I've been really fortunate on every stop to be surrounded by great players. You know, Dean Paul taught me a ton at Thomas More. And, you know, the guys that worked with us, Brian Moore and Corey Filipovich and Scott Donaldson, now the head coach at Heidelberg, and Brandon Jacobson and Jason Lewis, great guys to have a great relationship with and coach. And I'm surrounded by great people now. Jason Candle does a great job of mentoring young men and growing coaches. And, you know, he's young and sharp and he's a really brilliant coach and really, really good recruiter. And there's daily I'm learning new things at my age, and I think when you continue to grow, you continue to improve. And without that growth, improvement kind of stops. And so the challenge for us as coaches and our players is to continue to grow, because that growth will spur greatness.
Yeah, Coach, I've had a number of the Mount Union guys on, and there's just a ton of similarity. I mean, you could tell, you know, the influence of Larry Karras or Don Montgomery and, you know, all the guys who were part of your lives as you were growing up, both as a player and then as a coach, that there's a ton of influence from Mount Union in the way things are done. And, you know, we could probably take and listen to, you know, Coach Candle on here, or, you know, some of the other Mount guys, Sirianni or Brian Flynn, or, you know, a number of Mount guys talk on here, and it's so many similarities between the approach with people, with professional development. And, you know, we see that you guys are starting to be kind of all over college football now, all levels. And, you know, that it's been that way for a while, but now everybody's kind of climbing those ranks, right? You got, you know, Matt Campbell out there doing a great job, Jason Candle. Like, just to hear you guys talk, it's just good philosophy, good coaching, good football.
Well, I know that every guy that's come out of that program, and certainly, you know, you go from starting, there's been three head coaches. There were three head coaches from like 1964 to this year. And that's Ken Coach Wavell, Ken Wavell, who was the head coach there for 25 years. And then Larry Karras, who had an unbelievable, one of the greatest runs in college football history. And then Vince followed that up, his son, with an unbelievable 9-year run. And, you know, we're fortunate to have Vince with us now. He's doing great things with our program and our kids, and I think they really like him. And, you know, I don't think it's by accident that we have so many Mount Union graduates that are on the Toledo staff. You look at you know, myself and Coach Candle and Ross Watson and Vince Karras and Ricky Ciccone, who runs our recruiting. Tim Kennedy is one of our GAs, played wide receiver there. Christian Klinik, who played DB, who's our assistant strength coach. There's certainly evidence of how you run a program, how you build relationships, and I don't think it's by accident that Jason has surrounded himself with a bunch of guys that have very similar philosophies, certainly.
Coach, I think the other thing you did really well was build an offensive line. And, you know, at the Division III level, you know, sometimes you get those guys who look the part, and sometimes that you got the guys who are 5'10", 245 pounds, but can play their butts off. And I've seen you coach all those types of guys up, probably on the smaller side more often than not. And, you know, it's, I think, a testament to just what you do as a coach beyond the relationship side, that you're able to, you know, teach these guys to be very technical. You guys had, you know, really good lines there that I think enabled you guys to have a powerful offense. So as far as your philosophy and the things you really lay the foundation on for offensive line, what are the things you build upon?
Well, you know, we were at Heidelberg, it was pretty clear to us that if a kid was 6'5", 6'6", and we were recruiting him, he probably was not the caliber of skill level that we were looking for, because those guys with that skill level were typically going to get scholarship offers somewhere. So we took the philosophy that I want to find the guys that are Division I caliber players that are 2 inches too short. So our tackles might be 6'3". We've had set tackles at Heidelberg that were 6 foot or 6'1", but they could move. They were athletic. The athleticism, I think, was really at a premium, and I think that's carried over with me here. Now, we have the opportunity to recruit more of that size. But, you know, to me, offensive line play really starts from the ground up. It starts with teaching and really getting guys to comprehend how important their stance is, how important the initial movement of how to work off the opposite foot to start their movement. If I'm stepping to my right, I'm not stepping right, I'm driving off my left. And using your opposite foot to generate power into the ground is what's, you know, in our world right now, that's really the way it goes, because we want guys that have a natural bend. We want guys that are able to get their backs flat into a block. They're able to play off both feet. They've got some aggression. They've got some violence. But it's controlled violence in a way that's going to allow them to be productive. You know, those are the things that we look at. And I think, you know, as we continue to do this, we've been very fortunate here at Toledo to recruit guys that really fit the mold of what we're looking for. That not every guy is going to be a 300-pound guy, and we're not interested in that. We're interested in guys that are athletic. If you're 250 and athletic, our strength coaches, Brad Bichet, will do an unbelievable job to get you to 285. If you're a 280-pound guard, chances are you're going to be a 305 guard that can move and can pull and can get to the second level on zone blocking. He can get around the horn on a pin and pull sweep play. That's the stuff that I think really puts guys at a premium, and those are the things that we're looking for here.
Mike, as far as bringing that unit together, right? You know, it's offensive line is different than really any other position group. I mean, what those guys do working in, you know, right next to each other, in concert with each other, is so important. How do you start to build that chemistry? And you know, especially within the framework. I know you guys would play a number of guys as well, so I'm not sure how that sorts out. You know, typically guys will have somewhere from 6 to 8 guys that they get into a game, but talk to us about how you build that chemistry within your unit.
Well, I think, you know, I joke with the guys all the time, and this is an old Jim McNally and Bob Wiley line, that the old lines are the mushrooms. You know, you put us in the dark, you feed us crap, you expect us to flourish. And we all kind of understand that, and that's okay. Coaching the offensive line is the greatest position on a coaching staff to have, because those guys, if there's that one thing that they hate to do, they hate to run extra. So they're going to be on time. They're going to work really hard. They're going to be accountable, because going out and doing any extras because they didn't handle their responsibilities, that's a mortal sin to an offensive lineman. Why would I run extra? All I got to do is get my work done on time. All I got to do is be on time. So I think inherently that group of guys, by and large, they're very, very accountable to themselves, to each other. You know, we at Toledo, we're the offensive guardians, the OGs. That goes back at least 10 years and probably longer, where, you know, there's an identity, there's a brand that goes behind that, and there's a lot of pride in that. You know, you see guys like that are coming out of our program now dating back 10, 12, 13 years ago, and we have in our building pictures of guys that are in the NFL, and John Greco just retired. His picture was up there, and right on his right bicep, he had an OG tattoo that you could see every day. That's not just something our guys say. It's something they really believe in, and it's you know, historical, dating back to at least Matt Campbell was the O-line coach, and maybe even further. I don't know, but I just know that it's something our guys, they have an identity, they have a brand, and they've got a standard to live up to, and we don't ever change the standard. You know, the expectation is we're going to lead from the front. We're going to be the guys you can count on the most. And, you know, Jim Boltman, when he was at Ohio State, talked about his time at Virginia where he was forced to play 8 linemen. And he didn't know how that was going to work, but what he found was a lot of their big play cut-ups happened when there was 1 or 2 or 3 backups in there, because those guys are in a rotation. They may not get 60 plays, but they may get 16 or 20, and they're going like crazy to really make an impact on those plays. And what he said was it really made a big difference in how the twos practiced during the week, because they were fighting to be part of that rotation. And I think, you know, I heard that a number of years ago, and so we carried that out when we went to Heidelberg, and certainly the same thing here is we want to develop depth. We want to get guys playing. At Toledo, we've had games where we've played as many as 12 guys, and the game's going well, and we've got young players that are fighting at the chomping at the bit to get on the field, and if you earn that right, we're going to get you on the field. The guys will determine their playing time, not me, and they'll do that by earning trust and earning their teammates' respect through their practice reps.
As far as your favorite scheme, I know in game 10 in 2013, that play was pin and pull. But for you, oh my God, nightmares.
Come on, man. That was, we liked that play. That was a good one.
it was a great one that day. I mean, to an NCAA record. But, you know, what is it for you today? What do you like to start with as far as the scheme that you guys are going to build your foundation on for your offense?
Well, I think if you look at what we're doing and kind of how we break down what our offense looks like in the run game, you know, we are, I would say, first and foremost, a zone team. You know, the first play that we're always going to teach is inside zone, because that's kind of the building block of a lot of things that we're doing off the run action, you know, the run action pass, a lot of things that we're doing off the RPO type of stuff. So, you know, our inside zone play is always going to be step one. And then we build off that by getting into some outside zone. We're investing more in stretch than we probably ever have here the last 2 years, and we're seeing the results of that really pick up. And then the next progression for us that is really viable is our mid-zone play, which at times will look like a mid-zone. At times it might look a little bit like a pin and pull. We've got some unique intricacies to that play that allow us to get some edges and get some guys around the second-level players without necessarily having the zone through it. So we'll carry those, because different defensive alignments would predicate certain things for us, and other defensive alignments we may look at some other options. But those three things are really the building block of where we start. And then to build off of that, we get into some of our gap scheme stuff, whether it's a power or a counter, to build off of that. The counter's been a really good play for us to counter back against some of the formations that would indicate that we're running a stretch play or mid-zone play. People will have a tendency to want to overplay those with linebacker alignment, so Counter's given us some options to bring the ball back the other way and get some people out of alignment, set up some really good angles for some double teams. That would be the basis of what we do. Now, we've got a lot of stuff that we can build off of that, you know, with some kind of zone ISO plays and things like that. But, you know, if you said, tell me five plays you know you're going to have ready for every game, I would say inside, mid, and outside zone, power and counter are going to be, you know, the building blocks of our game plan every week. And then it's just a matter of, you know, in Larry Karras' terms, players, formations, plays. You know, first you identify who your guys are. You know, you have the players that fit that. And then once you identify the players that are going to give you an opportunity, then it gets to formations. Hey, if we attach a tight end, we're going to get this. If the tight end's off the ball, it's more likely to be this. So our formations can help us dictate some of the fronts and some of the alignments that we'll get. And then after you get to that point, then it's about plays. Like, hey, this mid-zone play is really good. When the F is off the ball, it's maybe not quite the same play when the tight end is attached because their defensive alignment changes a little bit. You know, a lot of those things are going to be where we go with how we design a game plan and, you know, where our focus is and where our practice reps are going to go.
Yeah, players, formation, plays. That's definitely something you hear from all the Mountain Union guys. I saw Coach Karras give that presentation at Ball State University. I forget the year, maybe it was somewhere mid-2000s, I think. And, you know, an incredible way, I think, to think about offense that way. If you can organize it that way, I think you're going to have some success.
I think, you know, I was a part of the 1992 team, and we lost to Wisconsin lacrosse in the Final Four. And Coach Karras went back and studied that film. And statistically, we won the game. We won the game everywhere but the scoreboard. And Coach Karras was going back through and reviewing the film, and we had a lights-out quarterback and all these really good wide receivers. And, you know, we get down into the red zone, and we'd be down inside the 10-yard line, and out would come, you know, two or three of the wide receivers, and in would go a fullback and another tight end. And, you know, we're in big personnel. And there's nothing wrong with that. Those guys were good players, but it probably didn't fit us the best. You know, like, use those good wide receivers. Ed Bubonix is an All-American. He's an unbelievable player, and now we're limiting his opportunities. And so, you know, Coach Karras, being the guy that he is, and it's incredibly smart, he really reflected on, how do I make this better? Why is this my fault? He's like, well, stop taking your good players off the field, and let's use our players and then figure out what formations and what plays will get there. And that really became the advent of the crossing routes, the double cross, and, you know, a lot of routes that are legendary at Mount Union that really started after that 92 season. And our first game in 93, I think we ran full right double cross against Adrian about 63 times and kept throwing Ed Bubonix the ball every chance we got. Excuse me, we were off and running. And it was, you know, it was a prolific offensive year, and our defense was pretty good. So we had an opportunity to have a good team.
Well, Coach, you guys, you've done an incredible amount of things, and you know, you're still continuing to grow in your career. For those young coaches out there, you know, looking to continue on, to advance in the profession, to grow like you've grown, what advice do you have for them?
Well, I think, you know, at least for me, when I got into college coaching, I worked every camp I could get to. Rules are a little different now for high school coaches, but those college coaches, get out, get seen, be active, don't stand around at a camp, work the camps. You know, I worked Ohio State camps for years and had an opportunity to learn so much from Jim Bowman and John Peterson and Mark Staten and, you know, all the guys that were a part of Coach Trussell's staff down there. We had an opportunity. We would chase Toledo all over the place when they did satellites, and my whole staff would work every Toledo camp. And I'm sure that, you know, that had a big part in the opportunity I got at Toledo with Coach Kendall, because he had an opportunity to watch me work and deal with kids and coach a position for him on a, you know, 5, 6, 8 times a summer. I think, you know, there was a trust factor that was built because he knew I would come and do the work. And so when Coach Campbell had the opportunity to go to Iowa State, and Coach Campbell was in the running for the head coaching job, he texted me and said, hey, I think I got a shot at this job. Are you coming with me? And I said, yeah, I will, because I want to work for people that I know, that I trust, that are good men. And Jay certainly checked every box off, and certainly coaching at Toledo was an unbelievable opportunity. And, you know, fortunate every day to work in a place with such great administration, great people, great facilities, great kids. And I don't know if it gets much better than having the opportunities we have here in the Glass City. So, But that all came from working camps and being around and, you know, just trying to work as hard as possible every opportunity you get, because you never know when you know, opportunities are going to call your name. And it was never about trying to find another job. We just do a great job where you're at, and those opportunities will come. And I think the advent of my career has certainly been that. My path to Division I football is certainly not the norm. A lot of guys go from playing to GA to getting a position job, and there's certainly nothing wrong with that. My road's been a little bit different, but I wouldn't trade any of the experiences I've had for any other opportunity out there. So I think I've really been fortunate, and it's been a really special ride for me.
Coach, last question. I'd like to ask all the guests here if, you know, you've mentioned a ton of great things today to do as a coach, and, you know, whether it's on or off the field, what's the one thing you do that, as a coach, you really feel gives your players the winning edge?
Well, that's a great question. I think probably the thing that we're trying to do is just get them instilled with the self-confidence that they have seen the toughest things that they're ever going to see, and game days are going to get easy. And that's, you know, pace of practice, the stress level we try to put on them in practice when it comes to pressure, movement, blitz pickup. You know, we try to rehearse things so many times that in a game it seems easy and it seems like it's slowed down. Now, a big part of that is going to be the experience level of the guys that are on the field. If you're playing a bunch of young guys, their comfort level may not quite be there. But the best way you do that is just be a positive role model, a guy that's going to be in their corner. I would say that my coaching philosophy is to encourage, to teach, and to have expectations. And for me, the expectation is, if you are a high effort, high energy guy and willing to learn, you're going to have a great career. And if you're not those things, you're going to have to make a change, because those are the things that are going to prevent you from getting on the field.
Mike, for our listeners out there, what areas do you recruit?
I recruit, my primary areas are Cleveland, Akron, Canton area. But as the O-line coach, I'll go anywhere to go find linemen. My secondary area is kind of the Iowa, Wisconsin, Minnesota area, which I get out to. We were fortunate. We got an Iowa and a Wisconsin kid on the offensive line. But I've been all over the country when it comes to trying to find these top offensive linemen. And certainly our reach is primarily the four-hour area around Toledo. But we'll go anywhere to go find the guys that are going to make a difference in our program, that are going to be impact players. So if they've got a great one, send them to me, and we'll get them evaluated, and we'll get out to see you.
Coach, give us your Twitter handle so these guys could follow you.
It's at Coach Hallett, CoachHallett.
Mike, appreciate you. I've been running you down for a couple years now, trying to get you to come on the podcast, and it was great to have you out in Louisville to our national conference, and absolutely great to talk ball with you here.
Always great. Anytime you want something from me, just let me know. Coaches out there, if there's anything I can do to help you, feel free to reach out on Twitter or any other social media venue you may use. I've got all of them. I don't know how good I am at all of it, but I can respond, certainly. So happy to help everybody grow in this profession.
Coaches, again, I want to remind you of what we're doing with the football development model. Please push this down to your youth coaches. I think this is a great way for you to get some organization and structure beyond what you've already done. Check it out, all of our program development for youth football at fdm.usafootball.com. Again, check out our systems for blocking, tackling, and defeating blocks at footballdevelopment.com. If you register with your email, you get your choice of 3 free videos. There's some great things in there. I think things that, as you get going again, can get into the summer and maybe make up on some things that you might have lost if you had a spring ball, if you had time here in the spring to work on football. Some great drills for all those phases of contact. If you're enjoying the podcast, please head over to iTunes or your platform and give us a 5-star rate. If you have a minute, write a review. We really appreciate it, and we will read your review on our highlight show that we do at the end of the week.